probably a safe guess that this is the first time there's been Hare Krishna Kirtan in this building. In places where I've been to retreats before, just by the presence of the devotees and the chanting, japa and kirtan and so on, the space becomes spiritualized, becomes a sacred space. If those two alligators weren't there, it would help. Maybe they can join the kirtan tours. Wag their tail. Krishna, Krishna. So there's disadvantages being in a place where who knows what unmentionable things were served and done and so forth in this heretofore not sacred space. But there's advantage to coming to a secluded place. I'm sure we'll appreciate it as we spend time together here. In a natural setting, at least outdoors. Peaceful. Over in that other building, over that direction, used the men's room, came out, and there's a guy with big leather boots. Like, you know, very politely said, "Good morning! You're here for a weekend of peace and serenity?" You can see all motioning to all the people walking around. So that's what we came here for. May you have a very peaceful and serene weekend. So we've been blessed. Benediction from a cowboy. Peace and serenity. Thinking this morning about spiritual life in general, it's not exactly a journey to peace and serenity. It's certainly a journey, spiritual life. And we're all at different stages of taking up, going down the path of spiritual life. And in our own tradition, Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, as well as all traditions of the world, not just Vedic tradition, but traditions of the world, there's a place for what we're doing this weekend, a retreat. What's the purpose of this time spent together this morning amongst those that made it here so far? It's welcoming you to the retreat and framing what our purpose or mission here is. Most of us, I'll assume there's some new people, but we're otherwise, most of us have been chanting for some time. following the process of Krishna consciousness for some time. And one of the many things that attracts us to Krishna consciousness is the message of unmixed, pure devotional service to Krishna, untainted by karma and jnana and so forth. And the Bhaktivedanta purports and the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita provide us with very rich descriptions of what that process is and what the goal of the process is and how to move along that process. Very powerful, we know that from our first-hand experience and seeing it affect the lives of others. My mind is going to a little anecdotal story, just an appreciation of how wonderful Srila Prabhupada's teachings are, that, so that we shouldn't take it for granted. This is something that took place 2 years ago at a GBC meeting. We're in Mayapur. And there's a conference, a book distribution story, or book distribution experience conference that Vijay from California is like our world, global Sankirtan minister. So he set up that conference and this little story came during our GBC meeting. I remember very clearly. The story was one girl who is from Eastern Europe somewhere had set up a table just outside Krishna Balaram Mandir, a book table. Because those of you that have been to Krishna Balaram Mandir, you know, many, 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 many people come every day to the temple. So they have more than one book stall outside. So it's just a simple table. And early in the morning, just before greeting the deities, as happens at Krishna Balaram Mandir, there's like a big rush of people that go to have darshan of Krishna Balaram. And all types of different people come. At that time of the year, it's the winter time, so those that live normally in the Himalayas, it's too full of snow and cold, so they come down to UP, and one of the places they like to go is Vrindavan. So in the front gate comes a whole large group of people that are followers of one yogi. And the yogi has these big dreadlocks that are dragging behind him, his hair is so long, like dragging on the ground, sweeping the ground. And his people go rushing in to greet the deities because they know what time it is. And he, everybody went ahead and he moved over to the book table. And looking at the book table, and he picked up Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in Hindi and looked through the pages and asked the girl in Hindi how much, since she knew how to answer that question, and she's from Eastern Europe, because he's selling books, and she said how much, and he rolled his dhoti down and pulled out some rupees and paid the book, and put it in his little bag by his side and walked in, went, took darshan of the deities, and came back out. At the end of the deity darshan, Guru Puja, he went dancing before Prabhupada. And when he went out, the whole, you know, group of people, it was a large group of people, went with him right out the front gate. And that's not the end of the story. The next day, around the same time, he came back alone. Not with his group of people, just himself. And he went right from the gate, right to the book table. And started looking at all the other books at the book table. And so the girl at the table, just social conversation, said, did you read Bhagavad Gita? I got Bhagavad Gita yesterday. I remember you coming here. And he said, looked at her and said, in English, he said, I've been teaching Bhagavad Gita for 35 years. And I never knew that I didn't understand Bhagavad Gita. Until I read this Bhagavad Gita that you gave me yesterday. I was up all night long reading Bhagavad Gita. And now for the first time, I have an understanding what is Bhagavad Gita. And I want to read other writings by the author of this commentary. So what books would you recommend? And she said, well, I would recommend you take a set of Srimad Bhagavatams. And he said, how much? And he paid for the set of Srimad Bhagavatams and said, I'll have an assistant come and pick it up and take it to my quarters. And this is a yogi who's not frivolous, very serious, years and years and years and years and years and years and years of dedication to spiritual practice and reaching a higher state of consciousness. Just one day's contact with Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita flipped him around quietly, but very powerfully. And we have this facility all the time. To a certain degree, we take it for granted. To a certain degree, we appreciate it. To a certain degree, we're too busy to take proper advantage of it. But it's a very powerful message, which we're attracted to. That's why we're practicing Krishna consciousness. It's effective. So, a retreat is to go more deeply into that message, that gift of pure devotional service. And speaking of retreats in general, minus the alligators, the intent is to leave other stuff behind and go into a new space where it's not familiar, not comfortable, all of the things that we do that busy our lives all the time, pressing against us to do stuff. It's not here. Deliberately. Going to a different place and a quiet place and a serene place and enter into that space. Retreat means a transformation from our comfort zone, our normal day to day, with the expectation that something, or aspiration, at least, that something beyond the day-to-day will be our experience. Prabhupada speaks about the mode of goodness as like a picture window through which you can see what's on the other side. When there's a wall, you can't see what's on the other side. There's something on the other side, but you don't know what it is, you can't see it. Except you know there's something on the other side. But when there's a window, more transparent than those things, you can at least see what's on the other side. And it's not entering to the other side, just seeing what's there. So a mode of goodness place physically, and also internally, is something that helps to go beyond where we are at present. But then there's another step. Once you can see what's on the other side, there's the taking the step to go on the other side. There's the window, and here's the door. And between the inside and the outside, or one space and another space, there's a common link. There's a threshold. You've heard that term. You know, when you there's a board between, like when you go to somebody's door in their house, and you knock on the door opens, and you're outside, and then there's a threshold, a board. And then you have to cross the threshold to go inside, or vice versa. Or to even make it, one of the things I like about Sanskrit is, I don't know the meaning. I mean, I didn't grow up hearing the meaning, so I have to, when I hear a word, it's like, what does that mean? Nice. For those of you that were born in India and you hear the words all the time, you already have some sense of it. For others of us, we don't have any sense. So, until we hear the word and how it's used and so many times and over again, and it takes on a meaning. So here's one of those words, it's not a Sanskrit word, it's linen. L-I-M-I-N. And linen is the same thing, the threshold is, you're neither inside nor outside, it's in between. But if there's something like that for all of us, with taking part in the retreat, there are things that we know because we've read Prabhupada's books and practice Krishna consciousness to some degree or another. So there are things that we know. And that's up here. It's very high. And then there's where we are. And that's down here. There's a gap between what we know and where we are. And the retreat is to go a little bit more towards what we know, although we're not experiencing it. We know that it exists. We have faith that it exists. We can look through the window, we can see it exists. There are things that have, that's within our experience, besides what we know, that says it's real. It's not Alice in Wonderland or Harry Potter. It's not like fancy and imagination. It's real. But we're not connecting with that as much as we would like to. And so retreat is to cross that threshold or cross that limit, the space between, to close the gap between where we are and what we know, where we want to be. There's very nice verses in the Bhagavatam that describe material existence as an ocean. And it's a very appropriate example because that's our circumstance. We're tiny spirit souls and we're in an ocean of material existence. Look in any direction. What do you see? Look up, down, sideways, front, behind, below. Any direction, there's material energy. We're in an ocean of material existence. And there's all varieties of species and forms. I was admiring, there's trees here that maybe it's like a relative of a banyan tree, that big branches come down, look like they're growing into the ground. We saw some deer and some rabbits and some big fat possum or something like that lying in the road. And maybe we'll see an alligator or two. There's all varieties of existence out here. But it's just an ocean of material existence, and it's pressing. It's not neutral. In one sense, it's neutral because matter doesn't act without the touch of spirit. But when spirit is in an enjoying mood, then it presses against us. It conditions us. We're conditioned by this innocent ocean of the child energy. They were implicated in the complexities of the laws of the child nature. Although we know there's another reality, a higher consciousness. But our own stuck position, even we take it. We'll get in the car and zoom, zoom, and here we are in State Park. We bring our conditioned space with us. Although we're externally in a different space. So there's a, for a retreat to be effective, there's a necessity. Part of it is the effort that we've made to get here, but you keep going, and the effort to cross over that conditioning, that means to let go of the conditioning and accept or enter into, take a step across that space to what we know. And to do so in the company of others. Very powerful. Powerful beyond our ability to understand. In certain circumstances, at least. Except as the course of this retreat goes on, we'll have experience of how beneficial it is to be in the company of other like-minded persons who are trying to cross at least some steps, cross that gap, that space between where we are and where we want to be. Association of devotees is a very powerful resource. But it's not just being in the company of devotees can be in itself very effective. I'll share two little anecdotes or experiences from previous events. One was 2 years ago in a place a little bit larger but than this space, but in Seattle, where in June a group of devotees, a couple hundred devotees, came from both Portland and Seattle, somewhere in between the two places. And a young couple came. And there was some sharing afterwards. And the first one that wanted to share was a mother. She was like very enthusiastic, first hand up. So I called on her and she said, I came here just to be with my husband because I have a little baby child. I've never chanted before and we're going on a japa retreat. And so I went just to be with my husband. He was very enthusiastic to come. He didn't want to stay home, so I came. And then there's this scene over, there's a whole group of people doing chanting. I got my little lap child, the girl's asleep. So I thought, I'm here, I'll chant. And I never chanted before. I didn't know how to hold beads. Didn't know how to put my hand in the bead bag. So somebody showed me. I thought, I'll chant. And I just was sitting there with my child asleep and chanting, and I chanted 16 rounds. And I thought, wow, maybe I can chant another 16 rounds. So I said, sure, I'll try. And another 16 rounds and 32 rounds that I never chanted before. Just being in the association of other people who are chanting. I thought, wow, maybe I can chant more. And then my child woke up and that was it. But it wasn't just that I chanted and I felt like, yay, I accomplished something. But I felt something. I felt something I've never felt before. And it was really nice. And I just wanted to share that with everybody. This is like, you know, thank you for all being here. Wonderful experience. No expectation. Just association. Very powerful. And another time in Chicago, we had a festival of the Holy Name, and it was sharing time at the end, and somebody raised his hand and said, I live in St. Louis, and I work at AT&T. I've never chanted before. So somebody, it was 4th of July weekend, and somebody said, why don't you come to the beach? Yeah, great. 4th of July, let's go to the beach. And then my friend over here said, well, why don't you come to a festival of the Holy Name on the 4th of July weekend? And I thought, wow, what's that? What's a festival of, I've been to the beach before, but never been to one of those other ones, whatever that is. So I said, sure, I'll come along. I came. And I saw all these, like, sincere people, all you guys, and you're doing this chanting thing. So I thought, yeah, sure. That's what I came for. I'll do some chanting. So someone showed me how to use the beads and put my hand in the bead bag. And I chanted 34 rounds. It felt really good. I've never had an experience like that before. Just being in the association of devotees. So we have a very great asset. Persons that would like to go further. And what to speak if it amplifies, or it's not just like, yeah, okay, sure, so try it. But where there's more seriousness, I want to speak now a little bit about commitment. Commitment's a nice word, it's not a bad word, it's a good word. Where there's commitment, something happens. And that the something that happens from common experience is you see an opportunity, and not just out of curiosity, yeah, I'll try it, but with some serious sense of purpose, something happens. The something happens is there's Krishna on the other side, especially when it comes to spiritual activity, but even not spiritual activity, just getting out of a complacency zone and into a doing something that inspires you, that is, you feel is very meaningful, a sense of higher purpose, a calling, something. And what happens is, not always, but commonly, the present configuration of matter changes. That is to say, Super Soul, recognizing the commitment of the individual, makes things shift. There's I have a poster, handmade poster on my wall, on my door, in my office in New York. That's a quote from Gupta, where he speaks about commitment. And he says, wherever there is hesitation, due to uncertainty or other reasons, then moving forward may seem like a big mountain and you can't go forward because of that hesitation. But when there's, on the other hand, there's commitment to move forward, then Providence, with a capital P, or God, sees that, and then all kinds of opportunities and facilities that just were not even conceivable or present before start to manifest themselves because of commitment. So, Prabhupada's phrase is that God helps those who help themselves. We're not alone. That's part of spiritual reality. We're with Krishna, or Krishna is with us. And that's a generic kind of sense of commitment. But in our case, the agency, the providence agency, is the Holy Name, the most accessible and most merciful, and for this age of Kali, the most effective means of bringing about transformation from where we are to where we want to be. That's a matter of faith, but it's also reality. It's spiritual reality. And those who take that step towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of His most merciful holy name, the holy name is the agent of transformation. Pausing deliberately with the thought that there are lots of teachings and teachers and movements and methodologies about transformation. Something that they have in common is there's an agent of transformation. And my message here is that the Holy Name is the most powerful agent of transformation. Very ordinary proof is that very ordinary people whose lives are made up of bad things, Prabhupada walked into the midst of and transformed them. Of course it was Srila Prabhupada as the agent, but that which he was delivering was the Holy Name. And it completely changed people. Completely. Along with his Bhaktivedanta purports, of course, and his own personal guidance, how to apply those teachings. But it's the Holy Name. Proof. Prabhupada referred to it. Here's proof. The process works. Look at these people whose lives were everything sinful. And now they're not doing any of those sinful things. And they're dedicating everything that they have. I mean, I'm not paying them. They were doing so many sinful things. Well, what's the enticement? They're experiencing something. And their lives are just, nice little anecdote of story of one priest. When they moved into the devotees bought the Fisher Mansion in Detroit. And Prabhupada's request, it was Ambarish and Nika Shravanti, Walter Luther's daughter and Henry Ford's grandson, bought the Fisher Mansion. And there was a local priest who was like really upset. You're coming in the middle of here and bring this, you know. So he had a meeting with Prabhupada and was complaining. You make all this noise. Why you can't just have a nice church here instead of this? And so Prabhupada spoke with him and replied, you're finding that the churches are empty. Why is it the churches are empty? And you forget the flow of the dialogue, but you know, he said, because they're distracted by so many contaminating worldly things. And he said, but our people are exposed to the same worldly contaminating things, and they're not following them. They're giving them up. He said, yes, I, you know, what's the magic that you have? It's the Holy Name. There's a process of direct glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they've given up so many other habits, drinking and eating other things. And so, how do you do that? He said, and Prabhupada smiled and said, in your church, you have a ceremony where you give out a little dry wafer. Try some of these. And see what happens to the attendance of your Sunday services. Prashad. The chanting of Krishna's holy name is it's transforming. So, two other things. When we come to a retreat, maybe our anticipation is we want to have some experience. Those that are familiar with this call it the quest for peak experiences. You know, I want to experience something. So those that have that expectation learn a lesson, commonly. There may be some experience, but it's an experience that is elusive, or they may not have an experience. They may have the opposite of that peak experience, something like, you know, a challenging experience. That's good. The challenging experience, if you stay with it, it can teach you something. One devotee was sharing this with me just from Janmashtami. They had planned their day in such a way that they could chant 64 rounds on Janmashtami day. And their expectation was a peak experience with their chanting the holy name, 64 rounds on Janmashtami day. So they had this, you know, and they had prepared. They were like wired and enthused. And what happened was it was just a struggle. Struggle. And as they were struggling, the realization was Krishna's fully independent. And that's nice. At first it wasn't. Krishna's my order supplier. I'm trying this, he's supposed to do that. And how come Krishna's not doing what he's supposed to do? But then they let go of their expectation for peak experience of what Krishna's supposed to do. And they just accepted. Krishna's fully independent. And my position is, I'm calling just to be engaged in his service and to accept a relationship with Krishna in a way that Krishna wants me to be for him. When they let go of the fruitive spirit, something happened. They felt connected to Krishna, and their experience in the relationship with Krishna just went, but it wasn't like, yay, now I got my experience. It was a relationship with Krishna. They expressed to me, it was a better realization than I had a peak experience. Because Krishna's fully independent, and I'm his servant, and that's reality. Let me just accept reality and cross the threshold from, you know, where I am to reality. And that's relationship with Krishna. Or, so, when we're in the retreat together, it's what are we here for? What's our expectation? Another way of asking the same question is, we're going to do this in a few minutes. Have you write a sankalpa, but, you know, ask yourself the question, why am I here? You can be doing something else, it's, you know, especially those of you that have jobs and you took some time off of work and you're here. Why is it you're here? What brought you here? Or what is it that you'd like to see happen in the course of your being here? What's your intent? Or your expectation? Or your something? The motivation? In Sanskrit terms, this is sankalpa. I'm going to explain the term. There's Vaishnava sankalpa and there's non-Vaishnava sankalpa. In Karmakanda rituals, it's a very critical part of Karmakanda ritual. you invoke mantras that invoke the Bhokta of the Yajna, Personality of Godhead. You invoke a particular Deva or Devi who, you know, is being propitiated to get something. You invoke the name of Ganesh to remove obstacles, and then you state what you want. I want money, I want health, I want wealth, I want, you know, Om Jai Jagadi Jahani. Whatever that thing is you want. That's the sankalpa for karma kanda. And for Vaishnava practice, there's some, when you sit down to chant japa, or when you begin your day, or you come before your deities, or, you know, you present your life to Krishna, what is it that you would like? And the beginning stages, there's all kinds of stuff. And as one matures in spiritual life and becomes purified by the process, they become more refined. So a retreat is a good opportunity to fix at the very beginning the intent of our declaration. It's I think of it visually like a magnifying glass. Have you ever used a magnifying glass to hold in front of the sun and put a piece of paper or wood or something and focus the light from the magnifying glass? You haven't done that? Model, have you do that one day? And then you can think of this word sankalpa. Here's how it works. It's a nice sunny day, and here's a magnifying glass, and here's some paper. So if I hold the magnifying glass at a certain angle, at a certain distance, the light that passes through, the same light that passes through the magnifying glass, it becomes focused. You can, you know, turn it at a little angle and it becomes oblong or, you know. But if you get it at the right angle, the light becomes very focused, like down to one point. And what happens is, the paper starts to smoke because it's hot. And then it'll burst into flames. Just from that magnifying glass, focusing the same light of the sun is falling on us all the time anyways, but it just makes it very focused. If you put it on your skin, it'll burn, literally. You know, just like a paper burns, or a wood. You can burn wood just from that. So a sankalpa is like a magnifying glass. You hold it steady at the right angle. Here comes the holy name passing through your sankalpa, and it goes to the heart. It helps release the heart from the stuff that's holding us into our, like, comfort zone pattern and carry us to another position. If you're clear what that sankalpa is and you continue the process of chanting through the focus and agency of that sankalpa, the intent. One last thing I want to share. Got stirred up again from reading Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja book this year. In Seattle this last June, third weekend of June, so it's not so far away, June, July, August, early September, so like 2.5 months ago, we had a japa retreat. And there was the preparation day and then the 64-round day. And on the morning of the 64-round day, after like getting everybody started, one devotee came up and said, "Something personal I want to share." Okay. Something happens whenever I try, I really sincerely, earnestly try to improve the quality of my chanting. Something very consistent happens. I feel there's a block. I don't know what it is. You know, there's lots of times I don't really try this so intensely. I don't experience that. But whenever I try very intently, it's always there. It's a block. It's like, not exactly fear, but it's something like, it feels a little bit like fear. It's some resistance from my side towards Krishna. What is that? What should I do? So I said, it's, what is it? What it is, it's our primordial, since time immemorial attitude toward Krishna. It's what brought us to the material world to begin with. And when you try to reverse the process, it's there it is. And it's okay when you're out here in your comfort zone, but when you start getting closer to Krishna, there's, oh, I love Krishna, I'm here because I have this rebellious attitude toward Krishna. I have a problem with Krishna. Krishna doesn't have a problem with me, but I've got a problem with him. And so that's what it is. And what you should do is stay with it. Don't like run away, you know, just like drop it, pretend, put it under the rug and like keep going. Stay with it. See where it takes you. Because, you know, if you really want, there's an obstacle, Krishna will help you get on the other side of the obstacle. But that's what the issue is, it's your relationship with Krishna issue. So this devotee went through the 64-round day and then did sharing at the end saying, you know, I've learned a lot about my relationship with Krishna. And, you know, I've got issues that I didn't even like understand so well before, but it's there. And here I'm doing chanting Krishna's name as the primary benediction for humanity at large because it spread the rays of the benediction mood and all those nice things. And I can't go very far with it because I've got a problem. So I'm going to stay focused on my relationship with Krishna and address this feeling from my side. Krishna's okay. Krishna's forgiven me, but I've got this thing going on. So I want to stay here and work through this resistance in my relationship towards Krishna. That was like this devotee's realization. And they shared it publicly. I was surprised that they shared it publicly because that's very private. Then, in this year's Vyasa Puja book, I don't know how many of you had the opportunity to read, but Ravindra Saruprabhu wrote about the same thing. And, you know, in short, he took very seriously the teaching that Prabhupada gives that I wrote about my Vyasa Puja offering about continuing to practice. And from whatever and wherever the mind wanders, bring it back. So he practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And he found that where the mind wandered wasn't due to so much, in his case, distraction by other things. But there was not an inner contentment in his relationship with Krishna. But he continued and continued and continued and continued. And then he started feeling something. The same thing as this other devotee expressed. He felt there's some resistance. What's that? Maybe I'll just ignore it, keep chanting, it'll go away. Maybe it's just like fiction. He stayed with it. And then he started feeling grief. But he stayed with it. And then all of a sudden this, he describes this gushing of very sorrowful, resentful, like intense, like pop the cork and all this, like a pressure cooker thing went all over the place. All these emotions. pent-up emotions in his relationship with Krishna. It was just like below the surface, like a volcanic eruption, just... And he felt shocked. He felt bad. You know, what kind of a person am I? And he's, I'm not a devotee. Those kind of emotions are not devotee emotions. But then he started thinking about Srila Prabhupada's taking the message of Krishna consciousness to such persons as himself and so many others. He gave the gift of Krishna's loving association. Just to like pop the cork or, you know, get release that contamination that's keeping us from where we want to be. Because there's this stuff that we're holding on to from our side that's problematic. And that the means of the agent of transformation is the Holy Name. So it came from Hermes, powerful medicine. And if you take it carefully, not like that, that's going to be your experience too, but it may be gentle, it may be rough, it may be whatever, but purifying the heart so that we can actually have, reach the goal, a relationship with Krishna. So a retreat is an opportunity to make some steps in that direction, and whatever Krishna wants, as far as experience goes, but if the commitment is to that relationship with Krishna, in some form or manner, however you feel it and however it comes from your heart, the idea is to get to that very deep seated, primordial, spiritual, Krishna conscious desire of our loving relationship with Krishna. Gaurijan expresses it in his Japa book as chanting one mantra at a time. The chanting with full attention. Even just one. Here's a story, Prabhupada's story. One of Prabhupada's disciples was chanting japa with Prabhupada in his, you know, quarters with a group of other devotees. And Prabhupada stopped chanting. He held his beads, pulled his beads out of his bead bag, held them in the air, and said, when we're chanting Krishna's holy name, all it takes is to chant Krishna's holy name even once, without offense. And if we can accomplish that, then our spiritual life is perfect. We said it every day. We have 25,000 opportunities by chanting 16 rounds. Just once, chant Krishna's holy name without offense. And your spiritual life will be successful. Put his beads back in his bead bags, using chanting. So on this theme of chant the present mantra, we're going to go into this after breakfast, but that's one thematic sankalpa. Chant the holy name one mantra at a time. As like a magnifying glass, pass the mercy of the holy name through to change our heart. So I'm going to give you some time. We have our little notebooks. Some of you already have your notebooks, but in these little handout notebooks, there's a 3x5 card, or a couple of them, and takes 5 minutes, give thought, and write down a sankalpa. Sankalpa is what your intent is in being here for this retreat. What you would like to transpire in the course of your time spent together. And I don't know, are you ready to pass the notebooks out?
Yes.
Okay. So go ahead, make a little commotion passing them out, and I'll just invite you all. If you have your own little notebook, you can write in your own little notebook. It doesn't have to be this other one. And take it seriously. It's for you. It's not, you know, there's no grading system here. It's for your staying focused while here at the retreat. And at the end, after 5 minutes or so, we'll see if some persons want to have a little sharing of your self-confidence. You can read it out loud if you like. Do this thoughtfully for your own benefit. Does anybody need more time? Just another minute. Finish up. Take a little time sharing, if somebody would like to volunteer what they expressed as their sankalpa. Anybody want to volunteer?
Should I read this?
Yes, read it.
Somehow or other, the devotee association becomes sincere in serving the Holy Name. If somehow I can be blessed with even a shadow of the understanding of the Holy Name as Krishna Himself, then I may be able to serve the Holy Name as opposed to chanting the Holy Name.
Okay. Now before we go on, can you share from what we discussed a little bit how you might use this in the course of the time we're spending together? Maybe I'll say it. Using this magnifying glass as an example, as a visual image. The mercy of the Holy Name is coming, and you're chanting. So this is something that's in your heart, that as the mercy of the Holy Name is coming, it can help focus that mercy of the Holy Name in such a way that there's some change of heart. And however long it lasts, it may last a long time, short time, but at least in the course of while you're participating in this retreat, and perhaps thereafter, there's a focus of receiving Krishna's mercy. Affecting how you see the devotees and how you experience the Holy Name and so on. Someone else? You had your hand up? Yes.
So to deepen my relationship with the Holy Name, by keeping in my mind the that the Holy Name is a different condition. The Holy Name is a person on a different condition. And while chanting or otherwise, I get to speaking that in my mind. Sort of behaving, you know, in a way that that's, you know, to chant with care and attention, avoiding offense, to become more dependent on the Holy Name and taking control.
Okay. There's several things. So I guess that gives the option that you can move between this one, that one, and the other ones of those several things. Perhaps you'll find that amongst those several things, one is really grabbing your attention and helping most to keep you focused, and then stay there. Stay with that message, that sankalpa, so that you stay focused and receiving Krishna's mercy through His holy name. Someone on the lady's side had their hand up? Yes?
My intention on
here comes the microphone. You don't need one, huh?
My intention being here is to be away from distraction while I'm in association of the holies. I'm all together chanting the holy name. So it's important to me. It's important. So it's important to me not only the chanting of the holy name, but also learning from the devotees and their own spiritual struggles and successes. Being together feels very ecstatic to me.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you.
So, before I came here, I wanted to learn things that would make my japa more attentive. But after I heard your lecture, it made me realize that I don't even know what the obstacles are that are keeping me from establishing my relationship with Krishna. So, I want to learn those obstacles for myself.
Nice. Be prepared that Krishna will reciprocate in ways that you may not be expecting. The Holy Name is like a touchstone. You've heard that before. Nama Chintamani Krishnas. And what does a touchstone do? A touchstone transforms things. So there's a condition of heart that's forgetful of our relationship with Krishna. And your sankalpa is, I want to know what the obstacles are in that relationship with Krishna. So be prepared. When things arise, don't be afraid, don't be surprised. Just like stay with it and work through it. I'm reminded of another japa retreat experience where a devotee, they were in a park in upstate New York where there was a lake. And one of the devotees, after chanting for some time on the 64-round day, went for a little japa walk, and they were sitting by the lake. And while they were sitting there, they were thinking, this is the fall season, further north, winter has already set in, maybe there's some bears that are foraging around looking for something to eat. No. They're just sitting here in japa retreat. Everything is safe. And then their mind started, you know, they couldn't bring their mind back. They started thinking about, well, what, if a bear did come, what would I do? Just seated by a lake. Maybe I'd run off the dock and jump in the lake. And bear, you know, with the, maybe the bear will catch me before I... And her mind just kept going and going and going and going. Finally, it was like, we're too disturbed thinking about a, the potential danger of a bear. So they shared that after the japa retreat. Another devotee shared and said, I was on the opposite side of the lake and we were observing Mona, and I saw you sitting there and I saw this little bear cub coming. And I was thinking, you know, I should call out and tell you, you know, look out for the bear. But we had Mona, so I didn't do that. And then I saw you suddenly get up and walk away, and the bear was startled and ran away, and so everything was all right. With that, you know, where your thoughts go, especially if it's something that's deep, not just like, you know, a mental fancy, but even mental fancies can... Krishna reciprocates. But if the focus is my relationship with Krishna, what are the obstacles? Let be open for Krishna showing what that is. And stay focused on the relationship with Krishna, not just the obstacle. Okay. Anyone else wish to share? Okay. Practice time.